Blog Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Well, it's hump day, everybody. It's hump day in the office, but it's a worldwide commemorative day for those of us that suffered on 9/11. So before I get into my normal pre-broadcast shout-outs, I would like to first say that I want to extend my prayers and my well wishes to the families of the victims of this horrible attack that took place a dozen years ago. Even though it's that old, we all know that the hurt and the memories of that day still haunt us to this day. Tonight is going to be commemorating the lives that were lost, the firefighters, the police, everyone that went in on that day, both at the Pentagon and in New York City, to the World Trade Center. All of us were affected, whether we were there at the site or not. And one of the things that touches me most is not just the grief and the obvious hurt from the families and when people speak about it, but just how much these horrible people that bombed these places have caused long-lasting effects on the way we just operate among each other nowadays. Every year, those of you that are my writing readers of my writing work, that have followed me as I was writing for the soap operas on Catherine Thurston's About.com, One Life to Live site. You know every year I write an article instead of a recap or a script or a commentary with regards to the 911 attacks. And it's something that touches me because I was supposed to be working that day. I had quit the night before. And people that I knew were affected that still were working there. The loss to a lot of people, it was just unheard of. So I begin by saying to those families that have hung in there, that have fought against war and against terrorism, that have managed to be able to tell the stories to the offsprings who never met their dads or their moms, I want to say to you that God is there, as much as it doesn't seem that way, and I pray that He gives you peace in this time. Okay, so we will be asking any of you that care to share or care to talk about it to share your 911 story, share your thoughts on it. We're also going to be getting into exactly how much damage has still exists to this day because of that event. And I would like to hear from all of you so that we can tell you on the air just how much we are hoping and praying that everything gets better. And hopefully all of us can learn from the pain that we experience from this each year and hear from some of the victims' families so that we can all start to have a way of thinking that's changing from what inspired that event to take place from the people who committed the egregious act. So let's go on with what we normally have to do to our sponsors, our affiliates. Barry Mason, formerly of 98.7 KISS FM, I want to say happy birthday to his daughter today. One of the good things that's come out of the representation of tragedy for today, his daughter turned 17. So God bless you. And Barry, you know, congratulations to you for having a wonderful daughter. But I also want to thank you, Barry, for being a man that constantly shows just great human kindness, constantly encouraging. You have done that for me since the day that I've met you, and the little things that you have given us from your experience in the business. You took the time out on a daily basis to offer some encouragement or to offer some help. And that's not something that many people, once they get successful, do. So Barry Mason, formerly of 98.7 KISS FM, currently with iSoulRadio.com. You can hear Barry Spinner's musical magic on Saturdays from 7 to 10 p.m. and on Sundays from 6 to 10 p.m. He's also CEO of Track One Entertainment Event Company. He sponsors the most wonderful R&B events in New York City and with venues that you just love to feel relaxed in and party in. And whenever you buy a ticket for one of Barry's events, you're never disappointed. So this upcoming event that's about to happen, you have seen on Facebook, back at that beautiful venue in Brooklyn, the Brooklyn Terrace Rooftop Party, officially marking the end of summer. And if you would like to be a part of this event, you can inbox me, Katie Barnett, on Facebook, or you can see Barry Mason himself on Facebook, or call the Track One Entertainment number that's listed in Barry's postings, or go to track1entertainment.webs.com, and you'll be able to order your ticket online. Also, to Stephanie Hammond-Tillette and Marcia Morgan of Simply Sensational, Inc., you ladies have offered some advice and helped us along as well. We want to thank you for that. Jay Dixon for constantly taking out the time to offer a little bit of just his human kindness and help those people along that are trying to establish something, and he helps them along the way. And he's just a good guy to be around. To my team, Lady Diamond, Elaine Nieves, Monster Miles, you guys are the most awesome blessing that anyone could have as a team and as people and as my brother and sister. It's just absolutely wonderful to be a part of you. Deacon Zeddy Williams, who's constantly calling in from Toledo, Ohio, taking time out of his very active life to offer his input and his feelings and his advice. And, you know, even offer some support to people that have been on the bad side of the tracks or witnessed bad things in youth crime. He's constantly here. And then those of you who listen to the show have pretty much come to know him by voice as well. So thank you, Deacon Williams, for all that you do. So the first thing that I am going to do is I'm going to play a song by Kirk Franklin that's called How It Used to Be. After the break, we'll be back and we'll be beginning this discussion. Thank you all for being here.
Can I be real for a minute? This life can pull on you, man. Sometimes you can lose your way. I ain't perfect. This is real talk right here.
Up. You already know.
No matter what I do,
I belong.
and son.
Run to your home, baby. Hey, hey, hey.
Jesus.
Ooh, I can't take another day without.
I can't do this no more.
Put the paper down.
I forgot
who I was.
Welcoming all the victims, survivors, to call in and share your stories. You know, if you are sad or you just want to make a change or a difference based on what you've suffered, please feel free to call in and you will have the floor. I want to join in with our co-host who's on the line and we will get a discussion started. We want to speak about what we remember about that day, what we've seen and changes now, and how we want to proceed moving forward from this. So just give us a minute. Welcome, Lady Diamond. You're on the air. Hello. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are definitely still suffering through last night's power outage, so bear with us as the connectivity goes in and out. We will get her in just a bit. What I do want to begin by saying is I have been writing for About.com on the One Life to Live site under Catherine Thurston. I used to write recaps for the soap One Life to Live when it was on the air and proceeded to write commentaries about the weekly shows, and then I currently write fan fiction scripts, fantasy fiction, I call it, so that when the show went off the air, the fans were able to continue the show in our minds through the scripts. Now, in the course of my 13 years with Catherine, I met a reader via messages, of course, but we sort of developed a bit of a relationship because one of the things that she responded to was my annual 911 commemorative commentary. And her name is Cami Milan. Every year when New York City has a live televised commemorative preemption of shows and all of the victims read off the names of the people that were lost that day, I've discovered that Cami Milan lost a brother who was a firefighter, who loved children, who wanted to be a nurse practitioner when he got out. He was in the military, okay? He wanted to, he went in as a firefighter that day to save lives and lost his own in the process. And one of the things that Cammy did when she responded to comment on my commentary was she spoke of how the pain in the family ripped through them, how at the same token, Michael died doing what he loved to do, but at the same token, you don't feel such peace in that while the grief is still fresh. Now, it's been 12 years since that fatal day, but what have we actually learned? Now, I've watched my children's playmates in school because the day that this happened, I thank God I was supposed to be working, but I had quit that job in the World Trade Center the night before. And the next day, being home, my 17-year-old daughter was in kindergarten, and I remember watching the towers get attacked, burn, and fall. And the paranoia, the fear, the terror, the grief that took place among everyone around, was the hysteria was over the top. It's inexplicable. You can't even say it in words. The way America was seized in terror and frozen in fear that day. And I remember having to run to that school. And when I got there, thinking I was one of the few people who felt that it was time to go get my daughter out of class early. And when I got there, there was a line around the corner of parents thinking the same way. And I remember when I went to take my child out of the classroom, she knew something was going on, but didn't understand it fully at 5 years old. So all she did was cry, burst into tears. And the shock of seeing that reaction and then the anger that came and set over me, because 3,000 people plus, 3,000 people that at that, it was 3,000 at the time that people can actually identify names or match a missing person to a name, not their bodies, not their remains, just a name. A certified person that went into the office that day, and everyone that came out, this person was not among them. To have to explain that to a 5-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 3-year-old, and then explain that the reason why was because someone, under some misguided anger, used God or Allah as an excuse to come out and slaughter thousands of people under the cowardice of saying that this is what the Lord would want, when it was really about political territory. Retaliation to some board meeting that took place in the big old offices up there that had nothing to do with all those people that went to work that day. I think every day about the people that were thinking about calling out of work that day, but decided to go and do the right thing anyway and go to work. The average Joes and Janes that went out there, combed their hair, debated with themselves in the mirror if they wanted to go into work feeling as fatigued as they did or as downtrodden as they were with whatever office politics were going on at that time. And I found it to be sad that had they chose to do the wrong thing that day and stay home, that they might be one, it might be 3,000 people minus one or two or three. But they marched in there to commit to their obligations as a worker, to their families, to build their bosses' businesses. They went in and never made it out. I think about those people who thought the terror or the pain of the burning gas and jet fuel that was coming through those windows were burning so badly that they would rather jump out the window to their death than to die that way. All the hundreds of people around the area that suffered from asbestos inhalation and smoke inhalation. And now at the end of it all, they had to wind up fighting and proving that they were there and they were suffering in order to get benefits from this country. But more so than that, the prejudice that entailed this country after that day, people who in my neighborhood alone owned local businesses, and our children played together, went to the same class together. And after this incident, everybody were put up barriers and hated each other in an instant, because people didn't understand that just because you're wearing a certain outfit, you're not the person who committed this heinous crime. I watched playgrounds become segregated as if suddenly we're back in the old times fighting for our civil rights. I saw local store owners now look at certain customers who's been regular customers there for 2 or 3 years suddenly become angry. I watched as Mayor Bloomberg swindled his way into office using our grief as a soft way of denying any type of pay, minus $1 a year, to show his patriotism and his love and his anger for what took place in that, in his way of responding or supporting America's grief, was to not take money for a position while everybody was still in the height of paranoia and fear and terror, and didn't even have a real good chance to sit down and absorb the situation. And then we had our president marching everybody off to war before anybody could sit there and say, do I really want to retaliate this way? Then there was a heightened fear that now this free country had to be under the metal detectors, and you can't fly the same anymore. You can't fly fearless anymore. Because now everybody who looks like the people that were splattered all over the news might be one of the terrorists that's here to hijack a plane. Now bags are being randomly checked when your children come home on a train from school, because just in case somebody is swindling a chemical or something. And to those of you who don't understand diverse cultures and differences, why don't you learn? That way you can figure out who's who and see them as people and not as color or not as a uniform or not as those people. And do understand that those people had people die too. Those people convinced a bunch of teenagers to kill themselves with a bomb in honor of Allah, a God. God would never in his life cause pain. He doesn't cause pain. He doesn't condone anybody deliberately sitting in a room, a cave, an office, it doesn't matter, deliberately plotting to go and ram 2 jet planes into an office building full of 3,000 people. No God would be that unmerciful, and I certainly know my God will never do that. People died just for being in the vicinity to enjoy the view of the historical landmarks. People died from smoke inhalation from the millions of pieces of debris and smoke and smog that was formed in the sky that day. Babies were born without fathers. Husbands never got home to see their wives. Wives never made it out of the world to see their families again. And for those that did, they're constantly now on call. And by the time they finally did get to the person that they named as the mastermind behind it, it was sort of anticlimactic, because now by then, did we really care that this, did we really feel the joy we would have felt if it had happened right in the beginning? And does the grief go away because another murder was committed or another killing happened? I'm not voicing a personal opinion about war, frankly. I believe it's necessary when it has to be necessary, when you're defending your divine right to be. I definitely believe in self-defense, but do I believe that we should be sticking our nose in other places when we have such a our own backyard problems to go and start sending off people in there to do the dirty work? I don't think so, no. Do I believe that politics should have been discussed in the middle of the site where people's bodies were being stepped on beneath bricks and glass and sticks? No. Do I appreciate the fact that now I have to tell all these young children who's now going to learn about this incident in their history classes why it happened? speculate on what everybody believes it to be. I have to explain now that the Hindu person you used to be friends with is being considered an Arab or an Afghanistan person or whatever the case is, and that, you know, people believe that they're one of them. Now you can't play anymore because that parent now has a problem with Americans because Americans had a problem with them and vice versa. We've all moved along, I think. But now we can't fly anymore. Now you can't bring food anymore. Now you can't just get through ticket checks and baggage checks and metal detectors. Now it's more scanning. Now you can't bring certain size bags anymore. Now you can't carry on certain things just to travel. Now even baby items are being checked and restricted. America is no longer free anymore. We're not a free country anymore. We're a country seized by fear and terror. Those of you that have lived with this, with direct personal impact, by loss, by sickness, I pray for you every day. The military who's out there defending anything that remotely resembles that day, I thank you. I pray for you, your safety. I pray that you get the recognition and respect that you deserve for all that you do. To the veterans who, if you were not disabled, will probably still pack up your duffel bags full of patriotism and honor and go defend this country. I thank you. To the children of the here and now who think it's funny to talk racism, ask one of those 3,000 families if they feel that it makes a difference anymore. To try to bring in our co-host again. So hope our connectivity has been resolved. Welcome to the On the Edge show, caller. You're on the air.
Okay, sorry about that.
No, that's okay. It was us on the stand too with the power outage. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening in to us. Thank you very much. The show is about hear from you.
Yeah, I know what the show is about. Well, I would have to say that what was it, September 11th, years ago, during that time, I was living in the Bronx, and I was looking for a job at that time, and I had a friend of mine that he worked at Border Cafe at the World Trade Center, and they told me, listen, he told me, you know, to go in early in the morning for interview. I said, you know what? That'll be great. I would like to do that. Get interviewed, start working in the cafe. Because that's what he was going to put me at, in the cafe over there. I said, all right, you know, pretty cool. My temperature agency also gave me an interview that same day, too. So I said, okay, I could knock two birds down with one stone. You know, I didn't remember what company it was. All I remember that I just had to go to a 43rd floor. That's all I remember. The first interview was at 9:10. The next one was not until 10:30. So it was like a good break time, you know what I mean? When I overslept, by the time I woke up with my blood sugar low, my father was the one that called me because he knew about the interview, and he started calling me like a maniac, trying to figure out where I was at. And during that time, you know, the only cell phone that was out there was the Nexus. The Nexus cell phone. Sprint wasn't out there yet. AT&T wasn't out there yet. Verizon wasn't out there yet. It was the Nexus phone. You know, it was like, that was like the only phone that was available that was like a cell phone, consider that, you know. It's one of the Boost phones, the first Boost, you know. And I'm like, okay, I picked up the phone. My father's like, where are you? I'm like, I'm at home. Oh, my goodness, Dad. I just woke up late. I have to get to my interview. And he's like, no, turn on the TV. You're not down there? I'm like, no, I'm not down there. What's going on? And he's like, turn on the TV. He thought I was already at the interview over there. So I turned on the TV, and that's when I was watching. I said, oh, wow, you know, I just see two towers. I was like, wow, you know, that's funny. I see smoke coming out one, and that's when I saw the second one hit. I said, oh, wow. I didn't know what was going on at the moment, but then I was like, wow, I would have been there. I had an interview there. I had two interviews there. It was bugging me out. I said, wow, you know, that could have been me in there. You know, so it's like to this day, my father, he brings it up once in a while. And I'm like, you know, I guess I'm so grateful for waking up late. My blood sugar was like super low that day. I'm so grateful for that one. But then what I'm not grateful is for what happened that day. You know, it's that was like the most traumatic moment, not only in New York State, but within the whole world. The whole world felt it. That was the day that everybody, no matter what religion you were, or if you didn't have a religion, everybody hit the floor on their knees praying. That was like the first and only day you see everybody doing the same thing.
It touches me so much because I actually worked in the World Trade Center. Mm-hmm. And that day, I was scheduled to work that morning. And I had quit the night before. And to wake up the next day and turn on the TV, and all you see were these headliners and these banners and these pictures of people just running crazy and crying and smoke everywhere. And I remember I called my ex-husband at work. Like, I didn't know what I was going through. And then he tells me, yeah, we heard about it. See if it's true. And I'm saying, I'm watching it. And I watched those towers fall. And I think back, so much pain besides just the death. The World Trade Center used to be a place that, you know, in my troubled childhood, I used to go, and I would think of my best poetry there, just watching the beautiful towers. It was a part of our signature skyline of the Big Apple. And
right.
I think that I would have been there. And I remember my sister's husband was working at that day, on that day, and she was going bananas because she didn't know if he was one of the people that had gotten affected. And she couldn't call him. She couldn't reach him. The lines were down. And actually, one of the things that I would tell you is that T-Mobile was out, but it was called VoiceTrain at the time. One of my first prepaid cell phones was VoiceTrain. And I remember that the day before, I was down to about $3, I believe, in money. And the next day when I got up to make calls, I saw that I had $50 in my account. And then right after, I was like, wait a minute, I don't remember. Did I? No, I know I didn't. And then VoiceTrain sent us a complimentary text stating that everyone was getting, some credit back to the account so that they could call their loved ones. And I thought that that was the most wonderful thing that a big corporation could have done, because no other cell phone company did that. Not one. And when they were VoiceTrain, I will tell you, I mean, that was the one company that didn't care about who owed what on which account, how much was left, how much wasn't. I thought that was one of the most commendable things that could have been done by corporate America. And so that was the first one of the things that gets me. I remember that was the first day of school for my 17-year-old daughter now, but she was 5 at the time. And it was the first day of school for her at kindergarten. And we were just looking, all of us were just like looking at this news event. Like, it's there, but it's not real to us yet. Right. And all they kept showing was these planes, how the planes came in, how the planes hit, how the fire started, people jumping out of windows. You know? And the next thing was, I said, wait a minute, I have to get my daughter. And so I called the school, like, you know, thinking the school maybe, I don't know, in my head, I guess I was believing that, you know, as much as I wanted to go grab her, maybe I was doing something that, you know, was just being over paranoid as a mom. But even the principal who answered the phone was saying, if you feel more comfortable, we would recommend you come and get your daughter, because they weren't sure what was going to be next. So when I got there, I thought maybe I was the only paranoid mother. But I got to that school and the entire line of parents was wrapped around two blocks.
Mm-hmm.
trying to get their child, and the principal had to come out. She looked like she wanted to cry, but she was like, you know, you all have to kindly allow us to do this in an orderly fashion. Everyone will get their child. Just allow us to make sure we identify who's who. Have your ID out. So that was the first thing, the first realism that hit me about just how much this act of cowardice. You guys, please bear with me. This act of cowardice had affected people. Because now your own children couldn't be handed to you without you identifying yourself, even if the principal knew who you were. Then you can't go to a park anymore and play with the same people from different cultures that you once played with, because now nobody really knows which Middle Eastern person you are.
Mm-hmm.
So you're that person now is a target. I know a person that used to own a 99-cent store right in the old neighborhood I used to live in. His daughter and my daughter were friends for the time that they were a year old and couldn't walk, or couldn't talk, I should say. And they went to school together, played in class together, sat next to each other in lunch. And the day that this happened, when everybody's slurs came out, when everybody's ignorance came out, when the fear and the paranoia and the terror came out, suddenly we were one of them, and they were, and to us, they were one of them. And suddenly now, we weren't getting the same friendly exchanges anymore, and it was more like they were protecting themselves from what they felt Americans in the neighborhood would do to them. And it was just horrible. Now we can't fly without fearing that anybody with a turban is going to blow up the plane or take the plane hostage. Now you can't bring certain items that you could once travel with to go see your aunts or uncles out in.
Katie?
Thank you.
We did have another connectivity break. This will be resolved soon, everyone. So thank you. And Elaine, thank you for sticking with us on this. As I was saying, we saw just people we were neighbors with. You know, suddenly we were enemies. We were like, you know, our own little private enemy lines. And flying is not even a pleasurable trip anymore. You can't bring certain baby bottles or certain baby bags. You can only bring, you know, XYZ measurements of a bag. You can't bring certain carry-ons anymore. And going through the security process is ridiculous now, but we're the type of people that can understand it because, you know, it's better safe than sorry, but to a point of what? Now they're talking about they want to start bugging your phones? So it's the long-term...
I know they're not bugging your phones already.
Yeah, if they're not. I mean, really. How many times is a text taking forever to get through before
well,
someone...
Think about it. You know, think about it. I mean, it's to the point right now, like you said, like, you know, they're booking, I mean, in my point of view, they're booking our phones already. How do they know about what we like, what we don't like? How do they know, you know, what kind of fashion that we like? How do they know the hairstyle? How do they know the trend? How do they know everything? Don't tell me that they have someone standing outside looking at everybody. No. You know, how do they know that we, that our, you know, the cost of living? How do they know anything? Our schooling, anything. How do they know? How do they know how many kids are in the area? Don't tell me they look at the census all the time. I don't think so.
No, I don't. I don't think so either. But the sad thing is that, you know, everything requires personal information now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if we were so, you know, a lot of this has been speculated on. You know, a lot of the times they're taking our jobs and they're giving foreign intelligence blueprints of the way, you know, the weapons are made that are used against us. I mean, a lot of this has been said. But, you know, the censorship, I mean, Jadakiss had a song, which, you know, I play on the studio pretty much, which is called Why. And one of the things they wanted to do was censor the man because he said one lyric, why did Bush knock down the towers? This is a man who suffered in America like everyone else did. Matter of fact, he's from New York. And he saw the pain on his family's faces. He saw the changes in the facilities that he visited and frequented. You know, these are the things that this act of cowardice took away. It makes religious battles, you know, such a question nowadays is that, you know, we when we go to church, when we talk about religion, when we speak of God and we speak of angels in heaven and things to that effect, we speak about that making you better people. So how can anybody fathom, accept, you know, or believe that these people behind these suicide bombs and these planes, okay, were acting on a God they served? It makes you question, what do they believe? But then again, I want everybody to understand that it wasn't everybody who believes in God or their God or whatever it is that commandeered these planes. And just because it happened to be a person from a country in which they live, it doesn't mean that those people are terrorists. The people who did this were ignorant, coward terrorists. Angry because they couldn't, you know, hash it out like mature adults in some political talks. This was not our fight. It wasn't our war. But it winds up taking the lives of people who have nothing to do with anything except going to a poll to vote. And it's not like the media allowed you to take a moment to breathe in and breathe, because all they were concerned with was showing the sensational footage of the planes going in, as if all those people who didn't have people working there that day wouldn't feel the pain over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember one distinct thing that I want to say out loud, and I know she'll probably never hear this broadcast, but to actress Kathleen Turner, I remember you not caring about the mics giving you your moment of fame. I remember you telling the world that if anybody had fresh towels and water, to please come to the side and help. I remember you running around looking smudged, filled with asbestos in your hair and whatever it was.
Yeah.
And scared. I remember that very clearly. So there were two people who will never meet me a day in their life that I commend to this day for humanitarianism. And I'll say that to VoiceStream, now that's T-Mobile, but the people who were VoiceStream, who made this decision, and to Kathleen Turner for thinking as a person for a change and not someone in the spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
how wonderful that was in the midst of it all. Nobody had a color that day. Nobody had a color that day because most of what they saw was gray ash and red blood. That's what they saw.
Yep.
I think about those boys who came from the country, from the terrorists themselves, trained in their mind at 15 and 14 and 16, that they were doing big man's work in honor of the Most High. To strap a bomb to their bodies and make a statement as a human bomb, and I would like to know what would make anybody who convinced a child to do such a thing believe they were giving this child any honor in themselves. How many military people, wives were pregnant, and because of this war, they never got to see their fathers or their babies be born?
Mm-hmm.
And for the rest of their lives, from the moment they could talk, when they start asking, where's my daddy? You know, this is what they have to be taught. They have to learn about bad people already before they could even start mimicking their favorite cartoon character on TV. Does anybody care that racism and prejudice and ignorance and, you know, religious battles and not understanding diversities cause bigger problems for everyone? Nobody can breathe anymore. Nobody could stop talking about it. Nobody could stop having hatred for people they don't even know or even really put them in the right geographical location. There are plenty of people that do services here that have nothing to do with it and that are appalled by their country's actions. But they're being tagged as terrorists, the same way there are Americans who don't agree with war or believe that going back there to retaliate after such a loss was a good idea. But we're all Americans in those people's minds, so in their minds, we're the enemy. Nobody is stopping to try to get over the grief and try to see where it stemmed from and make a change by using their voice there. Elaine, you and I walked the cities of Manhattan. Do you remember when we used to sit there before this happened and we just enjoyed the view of Penn Station, Madison Square Garden, Empire State? Do you feel the same now? Or do you constantly look up and imagine a plane is going to hit that antenna?
Well, before, we both met after 9/11. We both met after 9/11 because I know my daughter was a munchkin, you know, but now, I mean, no, I don't have the fear of that anymore. Before, yes, I had a fear that anything could happen, you know, an explosion, a plane flying into the Empire State Building, skyscraper. Yeah, I did have, you know, not nightmares, but I did have visions that something like that was going to happen again. But then now it's like I don't even see that anymore. I guess because of the outturn that's happened, you know, with the past few years that, you know, a family line has been found and all that stuff, supposedly, you know, I sort of got over it. Now I'm like, I'm a little bit more at peace than before.
I'm actually not. I still find myself being, you know, afraid to be underground in a subway too long. I work at MSG and I'm afraid, you know, especially when in orientation, when they were teaching us about what we would do in an emergency and where we would go if there was ever an evacuation necessity. And I think about that, you know, there could be thousands of children sitting in a game and somebody decides to use that as a statement. I think about it often, going down the elevator to my employee room. You know, I think about that quite a bit. I remember the year after walking my next child in line to school, looking up at tall buildings and wondering, you know, what's going to hit.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even go to the subway anymore and somebody accidentally leave their backpack without you having to report it. I remember some bus drivers, oh Lord, do I remember this, which I thought was appalling, but there were bus drivers trying to get out of their post or their route for the day that actually would call in and use the fact that some kid left their book behind or a book bag behind to get out of working. And one of the things that I was hearing was that the other people were saying, I know if that happened to me and it was real, I would be telling everybody who walked in the depot about it. This guy seemed to be relaxed after telling it once. I mean, it's not a joke. There were so many claims of fraud that took place about the 911 benefits. I mean, there's just so much.
Oh, my goodness. That was crazy. The 911 benefits, everything. It was, like, all fraud, and nobody was getting anything. The ones who, the survivors, the families, they were just taking advantage of. That was it. Like, people that weren't thinking about anything but money. Yeah, I'm gonna make money off of these rings, supposedly that they found in the World Trade Center, and they didn't find it. You know? Oh yeah, it must belong to someone. And they tried to find anything they could. Oh yeah, I found a body part from whoever could claim it for this much money, which is stupid. You know, all these people, they just want to make money off of the innocent. That's what it was. They want to make money off of the people who are suffering, and they just didn't care. I just hope they just burn.
I'll tell you this. I want to say this again to our military troops. On a daily basis, you're living under either possible or already happened terror every day. You're on call to go battle the possibility of terror every day. And I pray for you and I thank God for you because of you, we have a little bit more of a chance to sleep at night and lock our doors. And I can't imagine what it must have been like, those of you that went out there to serve during that time. I can't imagine. I cannot imagine what it must have been like to be away from your family, for you husbands that were out there with a pregnant wife due any day and were deployed over there. I can't imagine what it was like to be able to sleep with one eye open all the time or never sleep at all. Waking up and every time you hear a pop, you're thinking that you have to get up and defend your home or something. I can't imagine what that's like. So I thank you and I pray for you all the time. To the firemen that went in that day and didn't come out. Or came out with health problems or disabilities. To the police that served that day, to Michael Milan and the family of Michael Milan. I'm proud of your son walking out there and saddened by the fact that he didn't return.
Why are you putting Cammy out there?
Cammy, if you're out there, if you're listening, if you've ever connected to the show, feel free to call in. Because one of the things that you taught me, which I commend you for, is that your parents taught you how to try to deal with your grief and not hate. How you stood there and took your grief and made a public message to everyone, explaining from a first-hand experience how it doesn't make sense. It's not going to bring those people back, and it's not going to help families close off or enjoy what was good about the life of those people. But it must be hard. It must be hard to see it on TV every year. It must be hard to know that, you know, some corporation wanted to come in and turn that ground zero, I remember, into something that had nothing to do with the World Trade in the beginning. In the beginning, they didn't even want to do that. And people there understand that that is a site for 3,000 graves, unmarked graves. 3,000 unmarked graves. The families that go to see that place, that go there, realize that their relatives' remains could still be in the middle of the cement somewhere. I think about the 3,000 families plus that don't have anything to bury, that don't have any answers yet as to why, don't understand the senseless situation. And I wonder what kind of emotions they must have. I wonder what kind of emotions must be running through their head when they witness people being prejudiced against each other. or talking about, you know, going out there to kill someone, or what it is they must think whenever the president of the United States or some other country wants to initiate a military attack. And for those moms and dads that have soldiers in the military, the fear that must go through their mind every time they have to send their child off or say goodbye to their child. So it's very sad. I want to take a break, and I'll be back because I believe I'm getting a caller in that actually was part of 911, and I want to make sure that we connect them in. So, ladies and gentlemen, hang with me one more time through Kenny G's Don't Make Me Wait for Love, and we'll be back.
Just staring.
listening to On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm sorry, but the caller that we had apparently got dropped, so we couldn't get him in. But hopefully he can call back and, you know, we can hear his story. One of the things, Elaine, that I was, as we were discussing, is like the present day fear because of that day. Let me ask you, we know that, you know, people have prejudices, people have bigotry, people have, you know, ignorances and the differences in culture, you know, usually cause barriers and language problems and things to that effect. But do you feel that America has become more terror conscious, or I should say paranoid, with each other because of
You hear me?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. No, I was going to be. Yes, throughout the years since that has happened, people, I don't think it's prejudice more. I just think it's just fear. They just scared. You know, like if I wear a turban and nobody, or if I wear a veil, you know, and they know I'm not Muslim, but they see me wearing that. It's not that they hate me. They just scared of what my people have done. You know, so what they have done. I didn't do, you know, me for, I mean, I'm not Muslim. I'm not from there. But I'm just saying, if I put myself in that position, I'm not from there. Muslim people are just scared. They're living under fear. And to this moment, yes, they are paranoid. They're a little more, how do you say, a little more, they're trying to be safe more. They don't want to put the finger automatically at them anymore. They just want to, you know, at least move forward. But then they're still in fear. You know, I mean, most of the delis, the grocery stores are owned by them, you know. And people that, like, they became really skeptical about us from that time that has happened. Now that, you know, I mean, people, they try to open up more and they try to see, but they still live in fear. I don't think it has anything to do with prejudice. They just live in fear.
Right. I think so, too. I think one of the biggest proof of that, that sticks in my head, is the see something, say something logo.
Yeah.
You know, I think everybody is, I mean, don't get me wrong, I really don't think that, you know, you should be sorry, you should be safe. I believe that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same token, I think we've gotten to the point now where, in addition to the fact that everybody is now impersonal through technology,
mm-hmm.
we don't understand in the people in New York City are pretty much, they're connected by their routine, meaning that there are groups of people that take the same exact bus and train to the same exact location every single day and don't know each other. They stand
right.
waiting for the same bus. They sit in the same cars. Sometimes the cars are crowded, so they'll stand in the, you know, right next to each other, and everybody has on headphones or they're in their iPads or their technology or whatever it is. No one's smiling, looking at each other, even acknowledging who's in the same subway car with them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But one of the things that I will say is everybody has that common, you know, super paranoia. Now, as I said, it's understandable with what took place. I mean, I don't think anybody, I think America was, what is so, we were so secure in being the great America that we didn't feel an attack on our own land could happen. Usually when we hear about war goes away.
And what happens in another place, not here?
You know, right. I think that was also the bigger intensity of the shock with what took place, is that nobody expected that American soil would be attacked. I mean, I know we had one in 93, the Pan bombing or something, but, you know, I think this was of a magnitude, because the World Trade Center was attacked before, but it wasn't demolished.
Right.
You know, to have the landmark just be destroyed like that, you know, it was almost like watching one of those disaster movies in the movie theater.
And if you think about it, I mean, going to that moment, my mother, she has said it also, that the way that those two buildings were designed, wasn't for it to explode, because you know those two buildings did not explode. They imploded. They went in. So they toppled inside, but making the glass shatter, all the way down, so many blocks down. Compared to imagine if it exploded, it would have been far worse. A lot more fatalities would have happened. So that the way those buildings were designed, if anything happened to it, it was going to, like, topple in, like, one of those, you know, those, it's a toy that you pull up, and it looks like a little castle or, like, a little cake stack, and then you let go, and it topples right back down into, like, one circle. That's what, that's how it was made, you know. So that means if anything happened, which already happened, instead of it blowing out into, you know, everywhere else, it just went in and down. All you saw was glass scattering all over the place.
And the damage to the surrounding areas. And now let's not just talk about that. At the same time that was happening, not long after the Pentagon was attacked with a plane.
That's right.
You know, so America was being attacked on both sides, and this was like a very elaborate plan. But what gets me is that the 3,000 people who were attacked by it had nothing to do with why it happened in the first place.
No. I mean, there was like a lot of, you know, scandals and scenarios. People think, I mean, we all are under, like, the, you know, the thought of, you know, we felt that it was planned out. We felt that whole thing was planned out, because it was like a huge, I forget what they call it, but it was like a huge thing that was put on the buildings. If anything happened to it, a certain amount would be given back, you know. And it was like so many people were saying, oh, this was planned out. How would they know exactly where to hit the buildings at? How would they know exactly, how come the buildings didn't explode? How come the buildings didn't do this? How come the buildings didn't do that? It's like so many questions that we all have to. I mean, during that time, we were living in fear, and we were just, like, thinking of reasons why it happened this way, why it happened that way, you know? So, I mean, basically, we don't even have a solution to it. All we did was go after that one person who planned the whole thing out, and that was it. Katie? I think I left her again.
One of the things that I will honestly say is that, you know, with all the speculation that took place, I think one of the things that upsets me now, because at the time, you know, it seemed like a wonderful thing, was the way the whole mayoral thing took place. You know, Bloomberg just swooped right in. I'll say that to the day I die. He swooped right in. He took full advantage of America's grief at the time, anger at in the moment, the heated reactions that they had, the constant replays that the news broadcasts were showing. I don't think there was one show that played regularly that day, and I don't think there was one broadcast that wasn't continuous and repeatedly showing the planes hitting. They showed it in slow-mo. They gave you a scientific explanation as to how it happened. They gave you, you know, geographics and demographics. They gave you everything there was to know about the semantics of how the plane hit and why exactly the towers went down. And I don't think America gave a flying darn about how planes work.
Nope.
People were jumping out of the window to save themselves. Okay, people were jumping out of the window to save themselves, to escape the excruciating pain of heat and flame and jet fuel, which, funny, the burns from the jet fuel wasn't even direct flames, and that's how much more intense the heat is from that.
Mm-hmm.
There was a famous restaurant that, you know, America used that was in there with Windows on the World.
Windows on the World, yeah.
You know, so much history was destroyed with that act. And then, you know, it wasn't, people were dealing with the human loss as well as now the business loss. But most of all, I think the love for the landmark was at a loss now. You know, now there was no more skyline that was there. And, you know, I look at the World Trade Center, the Empire State Building often. And as many times as I want to have, like, my child experience the history of being there, it's like a part of me is still very, very much, very much afraid. I really am. I can't enjoy the beautiful sky and the wonders of the sky of Manhattan anymore. You know, I don't look at the Riverside the same way anymore. You know, I keep imagining how, you know, debris from exploded planes would land there, the tidal waves they would cause. Yeah. You know, how many people will be sitting there, you know, devastated. It's sad because this was all an act of somebody getting ticked off because, you know, they didn't win at a game of some sort. And then realizing that if they just went full-fledged ahead without having some reason for it, they would look pretty bad. So they want to act as if they were doing some religious, you know, martyr act.
Right.
Which I thought was absolutely horrendous. I just think it's so terrible. Now you have to explain to children coming up what exactly that was and why. Why are certain people who I normally play with now looking at me crazy or their parents are telling them to stay away from me? You know, why is Uncle John talking about them brown Arabs? Why, you know, things that affect, why is, you know, Uncle Muhammad talking about those bad Americans? These are the type of things that we have to teach our children over this because nobody stopped to remember that their neighbors are their neighbors. It wasn't them that pulled the trigger. It wasn't them that you know, put a gun to a pilot's head and forced them to drive into a window.
Mm-hmm.
So we're continuing the poison. We got paranoia. I know that a lot of us now are able to sit back in parks, but I'm sure that we don't all sit there with the same freedom and relaxation that we once did. I don't think we do anymore. I don't think anybody just enjoys looking at other strangers in the park enjoying their children because now everybody's looking to see what outfit you're wearing.
Mm-hmm.
It's sad. It's sad because you know what, as Deacon says all the time, you know, as much as people don't want to hear this, it's true, we do have to reconnect with our roots, with our religious roots, because we have to reevaluate what exactly it is that, you know, instilling religion and beliefs and faith and all of this means. It's supposed to promote better humanitarianism, better people, better character, structure, morals. How can you say you fear God, love God, serve God, and you're doing everything that God says not to do? And you took it upon yourself to be judge, jury, and executioner when the Lord said only He can be the judge. You know, how can you do that? And how do you justify the fact that you killed 3,000 plus people to get back at one person who you missed altogether? And what do those babies have to do with it? And what did Joe Smith in the office have to do with it? If it was about people making money, you know, big money and not helping your country or something to that effect, it wasn't Joe the secretary. You were saying, Lady Diamond?
No, I'm agreeing. I'm agreeing with what you're saying.
It's just, it's very sad, the ignorance, there's so much loss. There's so much loss. So much pain, so much obstacles that's in the way because of this. There's so much misconstrued ideas and stereotyping and things to that effect, and you know it's a very, very sad thing. A very sad thing. So I see now. Yes, you were saying. Go ahead.
No, I wasn't saying anything. I was just listening to you.
Oh, well, I know when I take my children to the park now, I still have fears. I still have visions or expectations that something is going to fly out of something. But I try my best not to radiate that to people.
Right.
You know, I try my best to make a decision on dealing with a person based on the person that they are, not where they come from or what they wear.
Right.
You know, I try not to group associate anyone. You know, I think everybody should be judged on their own merit.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I exactly feel the same way. I mean, well, the religion shouldn't be looked upon as, okay, this person's from this, so they believe in this and that, so that's why they're like this. Or this person is this color, and they came from this part of the country, so that's why they're like this. That shouldn't even matter, because now, we not only look at them as, okay, these people are terrorists, you know, not all of them are. I can't even say all of them are. I can't even say that, but I have friends from there, and I'm like, you know, I can't say that, you know. I can't say, oh, you know, you believe in Allah, and, you know, you believe that if you kill yourself, you'd be martyrs. You know, I can't even say that to them because they're my friends, you know. But then we also have to think about those who, like those, like the shooters. If we're looking at the people from that country as the way they are as terrorists, that means we're looking at certain people as killers, because they're shooters. They shoot kids. They, you know, they're mass murderers because of a certain color or a certain, you know, race they came from, you know? We shouldn't be looking at people like that. We shouldn't at all. You know? If I look at someone, I'm like, okay, you're white, so that means you must be a serial killer. Does that make sense? No. That's a complete difference from the person who is a serial killer, you know? Or if I look at a guy with a turban, and I do have friends who wear them, who are from there, I can't say, oh, your family, you know, are a bunch of martyrs, you know, who want to be martyrs, and they want to kill themselves just for, you know, the 50 virgins or whatever, now they're going to get up there. I can't even say that. Because they're different. They are different, you know? Nobody should be thinking that way, but then most people are so under the misguided seeing this because of what has happened. And they shouldn't. They shouldn't feel like that. You know, they shouldn't feel like that. Oh, those are the same people that we dealt with, you know, buying our food from, you know, going to the supermarket with, going to school with, you know, those are the same people we dealt with. They're nothing any different. They're not any different than the ones we know, that we knew before. You know, so it's just, like I said, I mean, a lot of people, like, you know, like yourself, they're still in fear. They're still in a lot of fear that I live near bridges. I live downtown Manhattan, where everything has happened, you know? And, yeah, there's still people that look around and say, oh, my goodness, you're going to build another building as big. They try to move, my mother, she works for the city. They try to move where she works at into the new World Trade Center. And you have no idea how terrified they are going over there. They're scared of something like that happening again. They're scared because it's a high building, and it could be a high target again. You know, and I do understand the fear. I do understand it.
I definitely have it, and I will say that aloud. I do. I'm not so sure that I believe or trust in the security of certain things anymore. I say that because that day affected me in such a way. I think about the fact that one of the other, she didn't work in my company. She worked in one of the malls in the basement of one of the towers, and we used to meet during a lunch break often. And I remember her mom calling me in a panic, asking me, did she call me that day? Did she say she was there? Because that was the day she went into work, and she didn't feel well. She didn't feel well. She was debating calling out. And for 2 weeks, her mother couldn't find her.
Wow.
She was prepared to mourn her until what happened to happen was she was in a hospital or a medical facility or something to that effect. I forgot. I think it was like a mobile van or something like that. And somebody finally thought to look into the clothing that they took from her to put her hospital gear on or whatever, and happened to find she had one of those tiny little mini address books they used to sell in the front counters of the pharmacies.
Yeah,
she happened to have her name, her address, and her home phone number. And when they called Lisa home, they asked, well, we don't know because she can't speak very well, but can you come and see if this is your child so we can identify her? It so happened that she got hit in the head with a piece of debris of some sort.
Wow.
And she couldn't talk straightforward. I think they called it aphasia or something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was wonderful. I mean, she doesn't speak. She speaks sort of stroke-like now, but, you know, rather have that and is alive. So
mm-hmm.
she wasn't one of the fatalities, thank God. I think about the fact that I used to just sit there in that big old court side, I call it, you know, looking up at all the different landmarks. And I think about the fact that what the peace that it once gave me now brings terror and fear.
Yeah.
And how I don't look at Manhattan the same anymore. You know, everybody's fighting. Everybody's worried about leaving a bad behind. And, you know, it's cowardly.
Yeah, we shouldn't be living in that type of fear. And from the beginning, I can't say anymore, but people still live in fear. It's like, I totally disagree with the Wi-Fi thing going on down there. And, you know, that they let the Wi-Fi on in the train station. I totally disagree with that one. Why? I mean, hello. I mean, they are advanced enough to make a bomb through a cell phone, through a sneaker. Remember that one? A sneaker. So why can't they do the same thing in the train station? But now they have Wi-Fi access, and they know the map and everything of the MTA, if you get what I'm saying, you know? I was, like, totally against what they said. Oh, yeah, now we got Wi-Fi. Everybody's all happy about it. I'm like, are you kidding me? No, we shouldn't even be having Wi-Fi in the tunnel. We shouldn't even be taking pictures of down there so you can have a memory of the tunnel. Right. So you can have a memory of the tunnel. Right, you know? It makes no sense. You want a memory of the tunnel? Draw it. You know?
Right.
That's my point. Draw it. You know, they don't need to have Wi-Fi in the tunnels. Or if they continue playing the game, so they can think going on Facebook or Twitter. That's not important. They can do that when they get home.
I think when they thought of it, it was more in terms of if there was an emergency. But see, you know, that's where the part of us having to get over, I guess, our paranoia, where we have to start trying to embrace what's good about it. At the same token, there has to be some safety measurements in place as well. You know,
right.
I mean, instead of you trying to tag and track and bug just a regular civilian's home, start looking for what would be a red alert or a red flag about these new things that you're doing. You know, what is it? I mean, I just think about the families that's got to tell the grandchildren and the great-grandchildren and the nieces and nephews that are new to the situation going on, how
yeah.
they lost uncle, how they lost their aunt, how we will never know. Where can you go visit them to put flowers?
Right.
Well, the only grave that they know is at the site itself. And now it's all cemented over and prettied up and two lights come on every 911. You know, how do you do that?
Right.
I remember the big debate about when they wanted to turn Ground Zero into some other sort of, you know, non-personal commercialized building area, and there was a big fight because the victim said that was considered sacred land, considering that so many people's remains were there.
Right.
And I think we're right about when people are stressing different colors so much that when that bomb went off with the suicide child that you probably would have never looked at twice or had a problem with because they were different, what color did he bleed?
Mm-hmm.
It's sad, it's tragic, it's everything. Now I want to take the last half of the segment, and I want to start bringing, you know, making some shout-outs about good things that came from this, people learning from this. I wanted to shout out to, let me get this name correct. Okay. Cheyenne Rossetti in Brooklyn, New York. You met me in a Home Depot, and one of the things that I witnessed you do and I thought was absolutely remarkable was there was a Muslim in the Home Depot, and there was a non-Muslim standing on the line. I believe she said it was a line before or after, and there was a huge altercation between Cheyenne and this person, the non-Muslim person,
right,
in the parking lot. And I was walking up and I was listening, and I heard Cheyenne say to this person, with everything that's going on, with what today means, haven't you learned your lesson about profiling people already? You know, they profiled us, they targeted us, they hated us, and they bombed 3,000 people plus. Why is it that we're not trying to make a change now? You're going to talk about this woman because she's Muslim and all she's doing is buying a lock for her door with her two children in front of her because she's wearing a different outfit? Now, I didn't get involved in the conversation because it wasn't mine, but this person displayed the most senseless lack of class there was when he called her every name in the book and told her that she was a what did he call it, a brownie lover? And then brought up about these people killed our 3,000 people. No, that lady didn't. That lady didn't. And she probably ran from her country because she wasn't in agreement of what took place there. Why would you nail her for the collective? So when this argument between Cheyenne and this other person was over, I told her who I was, what we do, and I told her that I would mention it. Because you know what? There is still hope alive in humanity. There are people out there that still will open their mouth and stand up. I think about all those people in those corporate buildings, those corporate offices, who was debating on going in with a cold that day, who was not feeling well or probably had a big old fight in the office with a coworker or was told that they weren't going to get a promotion they felt they deserved by a boss and still had to go in and didn't want to go in but went in anyway. That was buried under one of those very thick pieces of metal.
Yeah, I lost you there for a second.
Does anybody stop to think about the average thinking process that goes on in our daily lives that ended tragically for someone that day? What about the person standing in that window that saw the police coming who were frozen with fear and couldn't even move?
Or the people that were on the roof of the building?
Or a coworker that was watching one of their coworkers get on fire or burning and couldn't do anything because it was going to do more harm than good. All of this because somebody had a temper tantrum over something that they couldn't win, or oil, or money, or just the fact that they hate the fact that they're you know, one country has something the other one wants and can't get. Is that what this is about?
This is all love thing.
Which god do you cowards serve that would condone this or give you a prize or medal or seat in heaven somewhere for killing babies and killing babies' lives or quality of life, for taking a husband away from his wife and a wife away from her husband, for mandating that people have to, young kids got to get up out of their beds every day, put on a military outfit to go defend the country for something that you did. What about those children that blew themselves up believing that they were doing something honorable and would go down as a martyr who was remembered for great things? How do you justify that? And then for those of us that continue to hold hatred simply because the person might be from a place and you don't even really know if that's the right place, how do we justify continuing the nonsense? Are we already just afraid to breathe in our own land now? There are people, I heard some tourists once during my MSG lunch break, and I thought, oh my goodness, did I find that to be so sad. When I heard tourists and some people who are just living here, taking pictures. You know, they were out strolling in the city, and they were taking pictures of all the landmarks. And I heard one person say, you know, ever since the World Trade Center attacks, and I never really got good pictures, I want to take pictures while these are still standing. So is the paranoia gone? Absolutely not. No. Even though we're all braving it out and going back there, we're all still afraid. You know, I'm looking at people that won't stand too far away from an escape hatch while they're just trying to stroll in. They're afraid of scaffoldings. I've seen people do that. They're wondering what if the construction is really true. People don't want to go and be in front of cameras anymore because they're afraid that it might link, you know, be a GPS point for something. There's so many things going on nowadays, and that day really made things worse. Any of you that are out there, that feel free to comment and call in. Join the discussion. You are very welcome. You know, the number here is 347-327-9967. If any of you are actual survivors of people that were in any of those two places that has learned how to cope with the grief and has learned a great approach to explain it to the younger generation that probably weren't old enough to remember it, but now deal with watching their families grieve and cry every year, and you found a way to help them understand, could you kindly call in and share that? That way we would know how to explain it to our children and our students. To get them to answer the very hard question they ask us when they say, why did it happen? Or who did it? Or what was it for? That's what this show is for. So all of you out there who are angry by third party, meaning that you see someone who actually was involved with it or was around for the attacks, that you hear talking in anger or talking in deep hurt or grief about it, and you're reacting as sort of a loyalty to that anger, but you don't really understand what it is you're angry about. Try to think about whether or not you feel good being angry, and then try to think about what do you get accomplished being angry, and then ask yourself if retaliation is going to do anything to make a positive difference out of this. Those parents, those babies, those children, those wives, those sisters, aunts, uncles, grandparents, all of those people have to grieve every year, and although they've moved on and they've moved along, it never leaves you, especially those who lost children. Whether they were grown, they were young, they were just teenagers getting their first job, it doesn't matter. If a parent has to bury their child while they're alive on this earth, that is the worst grief you can experience, and you never in your life get over it. You move along, but it doesn't leave you because your child is supposed to outlive you. That's the way we believe it. It's life beyond yourself. And senseless death makes grief harder to let go of. Unanswered questions makes closure impossible sometimes. Right now, Elaine, I know that you have a softball team, and I know that, you know, your playing field is in the city. When you are around areas like water and overhead trains and things to that effect, do you get a twang or two every now and then, or are you completely okay with it?
No, I'm not completely okay with it. I'm okay, but not completely okay with it.
I will honestly say I'm not either. It's 12 years later, and I still find myself expecting something to happen. Only because, I guess, in all of my years of living as a child, growing up in America, doing certain things, you never felt that America was penetrable. And the Twin Towers, to many of us, represented like mighty strength, you know, and durability, you know, and untouchable, you know, untouchability is one of those things that we perceived it to be, like, you know, untouchable, indestructible. And the way that it went down, and I remember I sat there, and as each level collapsed, like, more and more devastation was with me. My children were 4 and 3 at the time, and I had a 1-year-old baby, I remember. The 1-year-old was crawling, and he just was looking. He thought that the big, bright flames was just fascinating. But the other two saw mommy crying and reacting nuts, because I did. I was, like, telling their father on the phone, oh, my God, it's falling. Oh, my God, it's falling. And then they wouldn't stop. And then I remember that I think after maybe the 5th or 6th replay, I couldn't bear to watch anymore. And I felt like a personal part of me was ripped away. Because as a child, like I said, it was such a point of peace for me. It was such a point of amazement. It was one of the eight wonders of the world. It was something people came from countries around and saw as the Statue of Liberty, Empire State Building, and the Twin Towers for many immigrants represented freedom and safety. And planes is something that helps you get there faster. So for a plane to have been what took down the mighty giant, and in one shot, it just melted away everything that was history for us. I wasn't thinking so much the political aspects of it. I definitely wasn't thinking racism. I was thinking a great piece of my culture is gone. All the reasons and the whys and why not didn't matter. I was seeing people, the same scene where groups of people coming out of shopping from there and their offices just enjoying sun on their lunch break, there used to be groups and crowds of people in the courtyard looking up at these things together, enjoying it. And now on TV, these same groups of people were in the middle of debris and white smoke and dust, and there was pain on people's faces. Some people had bruises from things that hit them, and slowly but surely, all of the metal was coming down. And inside at the bottom were friends of mine, wondering if they got out. Did my former coworker team, what happened that day? You know, then I felt guilty for a minute for quitting the day before. I almost felt guilty for surviving when everybody else got caught out there. Like, that just made so much happen. It made so much happen. Just that stupid little act, it made so much happen. Then, for the families, afterwards, America, overseas interactions, I mean, people just weren't people anymore. People just weren't people anymore. You know, the kindergartners were fighting. I was hoping that the clergymen that I reached out to would have joined in tonight so that they could offer prayer. And I'm definitely no clergy, ladies and gentlemen, but I am going to ask you, while we have 12 minutes left in the broadcast, to please, please, please close your eyes, take a moment, allow me to pray for all those families. Cammy Milan and family, I pray for you every day. I feel your grief of victims, survivors. And I'm going to ask that you indulge me as I try to, I say a prayer nationally for everyone. Lady Diamond, I ask you to join in on this too. So our children of the future, you know, that we can all be empowered. Just please, everyone, close your eyes. Just give me 3 minutes or 4 so that I can ask somebody to please bless us all, protect us all, open our eyes. Okay? Thank you. Dear Father God, I come before you, and those that are listening under the sound of my voice, both live and via stream, those that will listen to the archives as they come up, those that wanted to be here and couldn't. I pray, dear Lord, that out of this tragedy, out of the grief, we all open up our hearts and our minds and we can learn and rise from this. I ask that we all come together as a people, not black, not brown, not white, not yellow, not striped, just one people, that we're all your children. I ask that you open up our hearts and eliminate our ignorance, our prejudice, our fears, and help us to embrace life as we have it now, to enjoy the preciousness of it, to appreciate life and beauty in life. I pray that the grief of all those thousands of families be filled under you, if it is your will, dear Lord. Please allow them to be advocates to empower a nation, to help us stand strong and not stand for things that can cause this to happen again. I ask for protection, dear God. I ask you to help us protect ourselves while you protect us by being different, by getting to the bottom of what took place, getting to the heart and soul of it, allowing the politicians that lead us, Lord, to please lead us in the right way. I ask everyone who's listening to this broadcast be touched positively. And I ask that you please open up the eyes of everyone and anyone that may not understand that many of the things that they do and say out of not understanding cause harm in ways that is beyond just what they're doing. It's exponential. It's worldwide, and it trickles down to previous and future generations, Lord. I ask all of these things in the name of your precious Son, Jesus, and on the blood he shed for us, dear God. In the name of Jesus, again, I pray. Amen. I thank all of you who listened. I thank all of you who come to us every day, who stick through our connectivity problems, through our technology problems. I commend every single one of you who reach out to me, whether you do it on the air or you do it by inbox, whether you stop me on the street and say it, I thank you, because, you know, it nothing beats failing but a try. Nothing beats getting over your fear but facing them. And fearing another person simply because their beard is too long or their skin is too dark or too white, their noses are too big, their scars are too ugly. I mean, these are people. These people have a heart that beats and pumps red blood. We have to teach our children that the real honor is in being good people and doing something beyond themselves that might touch somebody less fortunate than them. That we can learn from each other, because that God made all of us unique in a different way. But he made us unique in a different way that comes together for a bigger picture as one team. The tragedy of this event should not have birthed new and improved or new and evolved prejudice, mutated hate. It shouldn't have. It should have taught us that life is precious and can go at any day. And that when you drive on the street, you're not just driving yourself, you're driving for other people around you. And that while you might be a safe driver, this is proverbially and literally, that other people may not be as responsible as you are, so you might have to have twice the eyes to compensate for those that don't. And if you indulge in something that promotes ignorance or promotes negativity, it's only going to beget negativity. It's only going to promote negativity. But the power is in us, one household at a time, one child, one person, one adult at a time. The power is in you to do something different, to say that I don't want to be that. I don't want to go out there and do that. There is so much of it. You know, I want to be the trendsetter, not the person that follows the trend. So you know what? Negativity, impersonality, you know, staying to yourself, technology indulgence, all of these things, ignoring what is true and real and alive right now, you know, shunning people because they look different, you know, grouping people because somebody in their area did something. All of these things promote nothing but stagnation. We'll remain stagnant in our own ignorance, in our own lack of progress because of this. And to those of you who say that you're doing things because this is what God wants, God promotes positivity and love. He promotes equality. He represents being all forgiven and never wavering. How can you say that any of this is done through God? How? And live with yourselves. Elaine, please, your final thoughts, because we have about 6 minutes left before we end. Lady Diamond.
I'm here. Sorry. I really don't have a final thought for this. It's already been 12 years, and we are, some of us have moved on, but not so far on to actually, you know, live a full life. We're still missing people in our lives that perished from what happened in 9/11. And it's sometimes, for most of us, it's hard. For others, it's too hard to move on. It's too hard to walk through the streets without looking up at the sky and wondering what's going to happen. It's hard for some of us to move forward and say, okay, this person's no longer here anymore. You know, they're in a better place. We do believe that, yes, they are in a better place, but they shouldn't have gone so quickly or in such a way. Some the people who have died, their bodies, some bodies were not even found. They just evaporated or vanished through the flames and and the gas that, you know, that went through the building. There's so much that we go through every day, not to think of it whenever we go by the World Trade Center area. Not to think of that moment when the buildings was coming down. Not to think of the good times of what happened at the World Trade Center. You know, the Latin nights and everything, all the concerts, you know, those are the good memories that we had of the World Trade Center. We don't even remember those days anymore, because all we remember is just something falling down into a pile of debris and in pieces and body parts falling all over the place. We don't remember the good things of the World Trade Center. So I just, you know, for those who have lost anybody in the World Trade Center, I'm sorry about that. And I just hope that one way or another we will all find peace. And I hope one day we just all find peace. I'm like a little,
I'm with you on that. I'm really wrapped up in a lot of emotion myself right now. I do want to thank you for that. I want to thank you for sticking through the panel tonight. I know we've been going through a lot of things we can't control with regards to the connectivity. You listeners have been absolutely amazing. We cherish you 110%. You guys come in daily and raise our numbers. And it's not the numbers that we're looking at so much that it's another voice or another group of people that are finding us to be positive influences and touching you in some way. So with that being said, let me say this. My final thoughts is, yes, it's been 12 years, and I know that the grief never goes away. But from that tragedy, do we continue it? Or do we take it and understand just how precious life is and how quickly it could be taken away? And try to make life great now the best way we can, to embrace time that we have, to embrace things we can do, to try to make the best of ourselves with people around us, to empower our world, our community, as much as we can by showing them that, yes, this is the way it is, but somebody is different in the group. And maybe if we stick it through, the differences that we're trying to make toward positivity might become contagious. To show our politicians that we're not supporting war for no reason. To actually listen to what these candidates are offering and hold them accountable for being sure that they secure not just their campaign promises and policies, but that they secure our quality of life the way it used to be. then maybe hopefully we can all get over our trembling of going on subways and planes and seeing someone that looks different from us and make a difference from this. That's my final thoughts. Make a difference, a positive difference, something that's going to be long-term and our children can benefit from while we got time on this earth. So without getting too more emotional than I already am, do let me say that until tomorrow night, folks, be blessed. Be a blessing to the families and victims and military and firefighters. Thank you very much. I pray every day for peace for the families. I pray that they can evolve in something. They can make their grief turn into something that makes their loved ones' deaths worthwhile. To the firefighters and the military troops that get up every day and do these hard jobs, thank you, and I pray for you also. Until tomorrow, folks, be blessed. Be a blessing. Make a difference. Make a change. We'll see you here tomorrow night at 8:30, okay? Good night, Lady Diamond.
Good night.
God bless you all.
Bye.
On the Edge, we'll talk about real issues.